He is an ESPN radio host. Additionally, he is also on the show on SiriusXM's Home Plate channel, and just is knowledgeable in a wide array of areas. Of course, that would imply baseball being on the Home Plate channel. But additionally, and this was why our senior producer, the FDH New York Bureau, Steve Cervillo, had sought him out tonight, the Kentucky Derby and all things horse racing as well. It's our pleasure to have on the program tonight Jody McDonald. Jody, welcome to the FDH Lounge. Sir, how are you?
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on, guys. And I don't know if I'm going to be as titillating as your last guest, but I'm going to give it a shot.
Oh, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. And I appreciate you hanging with us during the break. Appreciate that so much. It's good to have you on. I understand from Steve, he implied this to me. I don't know if he was 100% sure. Were you at the Derby last weekend?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I was part of the ESPN radio broadcast team myself, Brent Musburger, Jerry Bailey, Ronnie Flatter, and Bobby Valvano. So, yes, I was high above the finish line and watched Super Saver with Calvin Burrell get an outstanding trip, an outstanding ride, and put in an outstanding performance to take the Kentucky Derby.
It really was. And, you know, this 3 and 4 years deal being completely unprecedented. What do you think accounts for this run that he's on of the last couple of years here?
Calvin's a very good jockey. Is he a Hall of Fame jockey? That's debatable. Is he one of the best in the last 25, 30 years? He might be a top 10 or 15 guy. He's not a top 5 guy. But he does certain things better than maybe any jockey in the last 20 years, and that's ride fearlessly and ride specifically well at Churchill Downs. For a long period of time, Pat Day, who is one of the greatest jockeys of all time, owned Churchill Downs, and he would just win 4, 5, 6 races there every single day. He had all the best contacts, he had all the best trainers, and rode most of the best horses, and he did so at a tremendously high winning percentage. But Pat's been out of the game for close to 10 years now, and Calvin Burrell has taken over as the top Churchill jock. So not only is he a good jock, not only has his reputation been built over the last couple of years, he just knows every nook and cranny and inch of Churchill Downs and how to best pilot a horse around that track, no matter what distance it is, no matter what level of horses they're running, and he takes advantage of that home track advantage and has done so, as you said, for 3 of the last 4 years, which is unprecedented.
I'm curious how horse racing would equate to, say, something like golf or tennis in the following way here. When you talk about Calvin Burrell and his Hall of Fame credentials, in other sports, you look at something and the subject of majors, they kind of enter the fray in a big kind of a way. That's a thumb on the scale for you if you're tallying those up. For a guy like Calvin Burrell, what he's doing in the big races here, I understand to be a Hall of Fame jockey, you got to do it day in and day out, and career earnings are going to come into play and everything like that. But to what degree is it like golf or tennis or similar sports where winning the big ones is going to be big on your Hall of Fame resume?
It's a pretty good analogy, the majors being the 3 Triple Crown races. But also, and Calvin hasn't had huge success there yet, they have a Super Bowl of racing every single year, and they call it the Breeders' Cup. And it used to be 7 races. Now it's up to 16 races. They're probably going to trim it back down to about 9 races. And Calvin hasn't had that kind of success as he's had in the Kentucky Derby over the last 4 years. It is. It's a career, but also there's a little plus every major race that you win, and there's some during the year that are run, the Travers up at Saratoga, the Santa Anita Handicap, the Arlington Million. There are other big races with huge purses, grade one stakes that are also important. But, yeah, there's always a little added luster to your overall resume and evaluation when you win one of the 3 Triple Crown races.
Well, it's definitely on my to-do list to make it there. And in as much as we at the Sports Talk Network are based out of Cleveland, it's anything but an insurmountable drive. So I'm sure one of these years I will get to do it. I'm curious, when you're at events like this, and I imagine there's, to at least some extent, a similar degree of glamour at the Preakness and the Belmont. Does it really trickle down anywhere else here? I mean, do you have as many beautiful people showing up, say, at the Breeders' Cup or anything else like that? Or is the Kentucky Derby, as it turns out, does that end up being basically on a tier of its own? What's the hierarchy here of major celebrity events?
The only one that compares to it is the Breeders' Cup. and only when it's in Hollywood. They had it at the last 2 years out in Santa Anita in California, and when the Hollywood stars only have to take a limo ride rather than get on a plane and go to Louisville, Kentucky, you got a chance for an even bigger turnout if that's what you're looking for, the red carpet treatment and who's who is going to actually be showing up. Preakness doesn't get the crowd, the Churchill Downs does. Belmont Park may get actually larger crowds. They can squeeze 150,000 people in there. Now, they've only done it once in the last 7, 8, 9, 10 years when Smarty Jones went for the Triple Crown a couple of years ago. They had an unbelievable standing room only, couldn't get inside the park, sellout crowd. Usually the Belmont will get you somewhere between 75 and 100, and they always are well over 100 in Churchill Downs for the Kentucky Derby. So while Belmont might draw a bigger crowd, it doesn't draw the same celebrity crowd. Churchill is the number one place, and I can test that at least on Friday, which they have over 100,000 the day before for the Kentucky Oaks, we didn't have to deal with the rain that was on and off all day long on Saturday. There were some of the most attractive women in some of the most beautiful outfits you've ever seen in your entire life. I was amazed last year. It went to a new level this year.
Well, I'll tell you what, you know, and it's funny that you brought it around to that there, Jody. It's amazing how that doesn't transfer on Derby Day to, shall we say, off-site locations. Because I will tell you this.
Having spent many a cup Kentucky Derby in an off-track betting, off-site location, as you call it, I know exactly where you're coming from. Yeah,
In
T-shirts and cigars and baseball caps. Doesn't quite compare to the beautiful coifs and hats that I saw in Louisville on this past Saturday.
My goodness, Jody. Splendor is in short degree when you're at some of these other places. My dad and I, not to pick on this one facility, but we like to go to Wheeling Downs from time to time. We happened to find ourselves there on a Derby Saturday the 1 year, and I swear it was like every meth lab in the tri-state gave their people the day off. You know, unbelievable. You know, I'm looking around like, yeah, ain't no mint juleps getting sipped here. You know, you got to be in Louisville for that, apparently, Jody.
It depends on what you're attempting to get out of your Kentucky Derby day. There are many a days, and be they Kentucky Derby days or any other day when horses are racing, that I'm perfectly fine sitting around with the regular folk, the John Q. public, who are just there for the same reason I am, that they think they know better than the next guy and are going to be able to garner a couple of dollars and walk out of there with somebody else's money. I'm perfectly fine with both. It's nice to do it. It's fun to do it. It's a once-in-a-lifetime experience. I've now been lucky enough to do it 2 years in a row, but on most days, yeah, you'll find me in the off-track betting parlor with the rest of the masses.
Before I move to some of the other subjects I wanted to ask you about, I will ask you this too, because I'm always curious to talk to somebody who really follows the industry to the degree that you do. Just the curiosity that I have, I mean, it seems to be a relatively recent phenomenon over the last couple of years or so, this whole matter of hedging on whether the top horses are going to run all three of the races. And, you know, I'm just wondering looking at what happened to Barbaro and the subsequent loss of stud fees that came there, if that's something that's making everybody take a second look. But it's something where it almost seems like pitch counts in baseball, because, you know, like when I was growing up, I don't ever remember any of this chatter about, I don't know if so-and-so is going to make it for the Preakness. Maybe he'll make it back for the Belmont. Maybe it was happening and I was unaware of it. But that seems to be a relatively recent phenomenon, and I'm wondering what you think a little bit of the causation behind that would be.
It's a fairly astute observation on your point. It is true that in 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 25 years ago, horses that ran even competitively in the Belmont were definitely coming back for the Preakness, and if they weren't buried in the Preakness, they'd be there for the Belmont Stakes as well. That's just not the case anymore. The winner always is going to go, but there have even been in the last couple of years a couple Kentucky Derby winners who said, we'll see if we're going to go to the Preakness. They wouldn't immediately commit, and we haven't had a Kentucky Derby winner skip the Preakness yet, but at least we've heard people contemplating it. It has to do with the direction that the industry has taken and the way that they breed the horses. 25, 30 years ago, there was a combination of breeding that you could breed your horse either for speed or you could breed it for stamina. And they certainly have kept a lot of the longer races in the Kentucky Derby is the first time any three-year-old's going to go a mile and a quarter. But with every passing year, all the distances seem to get squeezed a little bit. All of them come back a furlong or an eighth of a mile, and they're just not running for the distance that they used to. Therefore, they breed for speed, and they breed horses that were tremendous sprinters and only went a short distance aground, and they want horses that could absolutely fly, and they just don't build horses to run long distances of ground anymore. And along with breeding for speed, the horse has also become a much more fragile animal, and we're seeing a lot more injuries, and horses are given more off time between races, and you don't see horses come back and run week after week or 2 weeks after 2 weeks. Horses get 3 weeks and 4 weeks and 6 weeks and 8 weeks off between races. So these are highly priced animals that have been bred differently than they've ever been bred before. So if you compete in the Kentucky Derby and you don't win, chances are you're going to give your horse the whole 5 weeks to get ready for the Belmont Stakes rather than try and bring it back 2 weeks later for the Preakness, and then know that if you have success there, you're going to be tempted to go again at a three-week clip in the Belmont at a mile and a half, which the horse will run that day and will probably never run again in his entire life. So it's a decision made by those who are within the industry, those who are paying the huge money for breeding these horses and paying the outrageous numbers for the yearling sales and the like, that speed has become such a bigger part of the racing game itself. The horses just don't have the stamina to do what it takes to be a Triple Crown winner, which is win three very difficult races in a five-week period. Just doesn't happen anymore, and that's why we haven't seen a Triple Crown winner in as long as we have.
Well, big money. Truly shocking that would be a root cause today in sports or in anything else. Speaking of which, with sports, again, this is the program where nothing is off topic, but obviously we talk a lot of sports and we talk a lot of baseball on the show as well. So I'm curious to get your perspective here as a host with the show on SiriusXM's Home Plate channel. What you think some of the big stories of the season to this point are? You know, certainly, you know, you look at the way that Tampa Bay has inserted itself very forcefully ahead of Boston in the race in the AL East right there, and obviously there are a few other things that might potentially come to mind, but what do you think some of the biggies have been as you look at it?
Rays are a great story. They've got a tremendously talented and young pitching staff. David Price hasn't even begun to scratch the surface of how good he is. I had someone tell me, whose baseball opinion I respect greatly, not 10 days ago, tell me that the pitching coach of the Rays said that Wade Davis might be the most talented pitcher they have. He's their fifth starting pitcher. He's a rookie this year. He got a taste last year in September and came up and pitched okay. And while Shields and Garza and Price have more impressive one-loss records right now, he actually thinks Wade Davis's stuff is as good as any of their guys. So that tells you the Rays pitching is going to keep them in it all year. It looks like it's going to be them and the Yankees. I haven't written off the Red Sox yet. They need to get healthy. They need to get a couple of their guys back and in their lineup because their offense is hurting right now. But I still like Beckett. Lester's one of the best in baseball. Lackey goes for him tonight. Buchholz is good. We'll see if Dice K does anything. I still like their rotation, so I don't think you can completely write them off just yet. And the Yankees will be there because they're the Yankees, and they've got more talent than anybody else. So I think it's going to be a great three-team race in the American League East. The two Western divisions have surprised me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm surprised that the A's have been able to go a month and stay in the race. I'm surprised that the Padres have been able to go a month and stay in the race. Two small market teams have gotten off to nice starts, and I think at some point they have to come back to the pack, but I don't know when that's going to be. I don't think they can sustain it for the entire year. And the Phillies surprised me a little bit that they haven't opened things up in the National League East. The Mets, the Braves, the Marlins, and an even improved national team, you've got some nice balance there, but the Phillies seem to have more talent than everybody else. I know Joe Blanton's been hurt. He just came back off the DL. They're going to get Jay Happ back in about 2 weeks. I thought the Phillies might be able to open it up a little bit more than they have been able to at this point.
Yeah, I think so. And with what you said about San Diego, it's reminding me of last year when Toronto got off to the start they were at, and somebody asked me if I wanted to reconsider my opinion, and I said, no, I'm good. You'll see. Yeah, same thing with San Diego. You know, I'm good. You know, I'll be vindicated on that one. But I want to get to something else here, too, because, again, Jody, you've talked so many different things over the course of your career, not least of which, I understand, pro wrestling, an overnight show that that you used to do in New York.
Many, 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 many moons ago, over 20 years ago now, as a matter of fact. Yeah, I was young and just cutting my teeth in the business and working overnights in New York. I had a friend who came to me and said that he knew wrestling, he had wrestling contacts, and that on an overnight show on a Saturday night, you could stretch the boundaries of sports talk and do wrestling. And myself and a gentleman by the name of Rich Mancuso did an hour wrestling segment on WFAN out of New York. And even 20 years after, I don't do any wrestling talk on the air anymore, but I still watch Monday Night Raw as faithfully as I can, week in and week out. I still like it. I still enjoy it. If you understand what it is, and I think the way they describe it now is pretty good and pretty accurate. It's the longest-running episodic television show in the history of TV. It's what it is. It's a male soap opera. That's all that it is. It's not sports. It's not a competition. It's choreographed, and it's predictable, but it's well done, and it's fun, and I've been a wrestling fan for, now I was talking about it on the air 20 years ago, but I've been watching it for 35 years now, so wrestling is still one of my favorite leisure time activities.
Yeah, and yeah, you know what? And it's something we've enjoyed talking about on this show from time to time. And yeah, this Rich Mancuso, I understand he was somebody who, as you said, I mean, he had some pretty good contacts back in the day when you were doing the show, and somebody that I understand has some good connections in the business. That must have been a heck of a show you guys were putting on.
Was. We'd get some of the wrestlers in from time to time. Richie and I even announced a couple of independent shows, depending on how long you guys have been watching, a name that may ring true to you. One of my claims to fame in announcing is that I was once bled on by Abdullah the Butcher.
Sweet.
We were doing an independent show in New York, and Abdullah came over and he tried to pick up the TV monitor, and it wasn't a prop. It was an actual TV monitor. It was pretty big, too, so I put my hand down on it because I didn't know if he didn't know that it wasn't actually a prop, and he eventually didn't pick it up, but he did. Abdullah was famous for being able to cut his forehead and cause bleeding at almost any time, so he shook his head at me, and I think it was about $45 at the time to get my coat dry cleaned to get the blood out from Abdullah the Butcher. But yeah, Richie had a lot of guys that he knew in the game. We'd get people on the phone every once in a while. We'd come in, get a guy to come into the studio, even with us on a Friday night going into Saturday morning at 3 o'clock in the morning. Terry Funk came in a bunch of times. It was fun while we did it.
I highly recommend, by the way, I've eaten there, Abdullah the Butcher's House of Ribs and Chinese Food in Atlanta. Went there, got an autograph from the big man who happened to be there. And, yes, it's true. You can't put quarters in the grooves in his forehead. It's kind of gross. But you know what? He was a heck of a nice guy. The best thing was, I'm in there. And there was an old lady, you know, who was in there, you know, with her friends. And Abdullah comes in, and she greets him with, "Mr. the Butcher! Mr. the Butcher!" So I thought that was kind of funny. By the way, when I drew you out with that last question / observation about what you and Rich Mancuso did on the show, that was known, Jody, in the poker game, that's known as a slow play, because we have with us online too, believe it or not, the one and only Rich Mancuso. Rich, welcome to the FDH Lounge. Good to have you in with Jody McDonald.
Hey, hi, guys. Hey, Jody. It's been a long time.
Richie, how you been?
I'm all right. Keeping it in the ring as always, Jody. And, you know, that came up on the show. Still use it today.
Outstanding. Yeah, that's the way Richie would always close out the show. Everybody remember to keep it in the ring. And
that just came up on the air that one night at 3 o'clock in the morning. I had nothing to say to you to say goodbye. So I just said keep it in the ring. And it's been there ever since. And by the way, Abdullah the Butcher's still after you.
Yeah. Tell him I'll make him bleed again.
So is Doink the Clown.
Hey, Rich, have you ever been to Abdullah the Butcher's House of Ribs and Chinese Food?
Yeah, I have, and I got sick.
Oh! Unfortunate.
Unfortunate. I haven't been in touch with him in a while. I've been doing a lot. You know, I'm still involved with it a little bit. Not as much as I used to. Keeping in the ring, the website is up. Do a couple of independent things here and there, but it's been mostly sports. You know, Jody, I'll tell you, 2 years ago when Stadium was closing down, I had been there looking all over for you. Where did you hide? In the basement there before they destructed the place?
No, I didn't. I didn't make it out to Shea toward the tail end. Yours truly was a little under the weather, as a matter of fact. And
yeah, no,
I had tickets for the next to last game. I was planning to be out there. I didn't get to see the raising of Shea Stadium. But the new City Field is beautiful in New York.
Yeah, it is. It is. I'm there an awful lot covering the Mets for LatinoSports.com, another website. Just put another plug in there. But I got to tell you guys, this was great because I haven't talked to Jody. It's been, what, Jody, maybe 5-7 years, maybe more.
I was going to say, maybe even closer to 10.
Yeah, and Jody put me on the map. He gave me the opportunity to go on the fan with him overnight. And to this day, guys, and I know Jody will appreciate that, to this day, people still remember the voice. And people still talk about it. And it was a great thing in my career, and it, very enjoyable. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. We had a gas. We had a lot of fun. And the best thing about it is that, you know, we drew the wrestling industry in. We revived wrestling talk radio, and everybody tried to do it after that. Some succeeded, some not. But I think we did a hell of a job. A great job, and to this day, they're still talking about it.
Well, guys, our senior producer who booked both of you guys here tonight, our FDH New York Bureau, Steve Cervillo, he listened to your show all the time. He was a big fan of it. He really enjoyed it. You know, and I have to say, you know, that when he was telling me very excitedly today about this, that not just one, but both of you guys were going to be available tonight, the only thing I said to him is, because we knew this was going to be a surprise for you, Jody, I was like, this isn't going to be one of those E! True Hollywood stories, is it, where there's a reason they haven't talked to each other?
It's the return of JM and RM. That's what we used to call. Jody used to come on right at the top of the hour at 3 a.m. and go, it's JM and RM talking pro wrestling, and we did it. And sometimes, Jody, right, we'd go an hour, and then we'd go 2 hours, depending on those calls, and those phone lines just lit up and did not stop. I don't know if management liked it that much, but we did what we did, and we got the pro wrestling industry some exposure. We had a lot of fun doing it. Those are days I will never forget.
Guys, I can't let this go without getting your opinion on something here. This is we were taking a look back last week. It was our 100th episode of our program here, where nothing is off topic. The first topic that we ever did on our first show, we wanted to set a very kind of eccentric tone for the program. It was a pro wrestling topic, but outside the box. And what it was could pro wrestling be an Olympic sport? And hear me out on this. Go back to what Kip Fry was doing in 1992, giving out the bonuses for the best match of the night. I would submit to you, in a world where we have synchronized swimming and figure skating and all of these other things here getting judged as Olympic sports, why not pro wrestling? You know, I could see the Romanian judge holding up an 8.5 for brutality, a 9 for athleticism. You know, I mean, let me ask both you guys this. Could professional wrestling have as good of a claim to being an Olympic sport as some of these other quote-unquote sports?
Well, you want me to take that first?
Go ahead, Reggie.
I'll tell you. Yeah. It's pro wrestling, and it's not a sport. It's entertainment, strictly entertainment. And that would be a mockery. And the only people that would watch that are the pro wrestling fans like myself. That's it. I don't see that ever happening. I mean, you got a great idea, but it's pro wrestling, and it's strictly entertainment, just like they call it. Leave the regular wrestling, the Olympic-style wrestling that's been around for years and years, leave it to that. And Kurt Angle, of course, come out of that, goes in to be a successful pro wrestler, still is out of that, and many others. But okay. It's... remember, strictly entertainment. It's never to be taken as a real thing, and I just don't see it happening.
I'll take that as a no, but you know, again, it's a thing where, you know, competing to be the best in the sense that Kip Fry was giving out the bonuses. You know what I mean? Putting on the best match of the night. You know, essentially, you know, you're out there with your dance partner, kind of like figure skating. Obviously, I'm not talking about winning a match competition. You know what I mean? We'll leave that for the Mark Markersons of the world.
I don't think Jody's going to say yes to that. If he does, I'll body slam him.
No, okay. You're not going to have to body slam me. One thing you'd have to get over, and the Olympics, and I applaud them for it, and the way they've handled themselves forever, is one of the most important things is that there's drug testing involved and that they run a very clean Olympics. And the Olympic controversies, when they happen, usually evolve around drug testing and not being able to pass and the like. And I don't know too many professional wrestlers who would be able to do what they needed to do to pass drug testing for as long as they asked you to pass leading up to an Olympics, during an Olympics, and thereafter an Olympics. So I'm with Richie on this one. It is what it is. It's fun. It's entertainment. It's a show, but it's not a sport, and it sure as heck isn't an Olympic sport.
If it ever came to it, my prediction would be USA bronze, Mexico silver, Japan gold. But that's just my that's just me as a Puro fan, guys. But anyways, a true pleasure to have both of you guys on the program. And again, let me give each of you guys a chance here, you know, plug away on your various endeavors and where each of you are featured.
Well, Jody, of course, is, you know, I listen to him here in New York. And, you know, occasionally, sometimes I'm out in Phoenix, Arizona, also doing some things. I'm involved in sports, basically doing the sports writing and sometimes I do some radio. I had a nice run up in Westchester, Canada. Joe, do you remember WVOX up in Westchester?
Yes.
Yeah, I did a nice four-year run up there, and surprisingly, it was all sports. I never talked wrestling maybe twice in the 4 years. But and now it's just strictly writing. I did some things with the Daily News here in New York. Now I have this website stuff. I have an active website. I do everything, even keepitintheRing.net, how appropriate, right? And NewYorkSportsDay.com, LatinoSports.com. Whoever wants to use me, they got me. That's how it is. And then, you know, Jody remembers, I still do my teaching. I still do my journalism programs here in New York. And that's about it, guys. Rich Mancuso's still around. And who knows, maybe one day I'll be back.
Well, we'd love to get you guys on together again here. Jody,
I would love it. I would love to do a pro wrestling show with Jody again.
But
Jody's more, you know, I don't think Jody's more this sport guy. You know, it's all sports. I don't know if he'd want to do it. But, you know, Jody,
I
wish at the time you were going to take me to Philadelphia with you.
Well, we would love to do a reunion segment with you guys again on the show. We did a reunion segment with some other guys that did a wrestling show on here previously. You guys would be the second go around that we've done that with.
I would love it. Jody, I got to see you. I don't know where you're going to be, but somehow I'm going to get in touch with you. We're going to get together and relive some old times, okay?
Done deal, Richie. It will be my pleasure. And, guys, I appreciate your having us on tonight. This has been a lot of fun.
Hey, the FDH Lounge, putting old friends back together. We did the same thing. We did a World Series preview last year. We had on Dave Hollins and Charlie Hayes, and they hadn't seen each other since they played together back in the day. They were like, oh, hey, we got to exchange phone numbers.
Very cool.
While I got Jody guys, there, Jody, what's your take on this, on the Mets?
I think they're going to be a fun baseball team. I think they're going to be a frustrating baseball team. I think they can be competitive. I don't think if the Phillies are healthy, they're going to be in a race for first place come late September. But I think the NL is kind of wide open. And if Perez and Maine can stay healthy and pitching better than they have so far this year, get back to the level that they were 2 years ago, I think the Mets can still be a wild card contender.
Yeah, it's like my buddy Wayne Hagen says, who does a radio for them, they're a funky team, and I agree.
Hey, still sounds good to me and to those of us here at the Sports Talk Network based out of Cleveland. We're stuck with those cheap bastards, the Dolans, who destroyed our team. That sounds good to us.
I was a Cleveland Browns fan. I think Jody remembers that, too, but I've since switched them. Now an Arizona Cardinal fan, so my heart isn't in Cleveland like it used to be. So,
well, you know what? But, let me leave you with this. We in Cleveland were all Cardinal fans on the day you guys were in the Super Bowl.
Understood.
They're going to be a little different team this coming year, but still competitive. But guys, it's been great, and I hope we can do it again.
Oh, yeah.
And Jody, it's great talking to you, man. And like I said, I don't want this to sound so corny, but I'll never forget you, man. You gave me the opportunity. It opened up more doors to me. We need to stay in touch and relive the moment. I'll get together with you soon.
Done deal, Richie. We'll do that. Thanks, buddy.
Hey, thanks very much, guys. We'd love to have you back on. We appreciate it so much here tonight. Jody McDonald, Rich Mancuso, thank you, gentlemen, both so much.
You got it, guys.
Appreciate it.
Keep it in the ring.
All right, keep it in the ring, guys. All right. Great to have them on. A little reunion there again. And I think the audience picked up on this as it was going there. Jody didn't know Rich was coming on. That was a little surprise that our FDH senior producer, the FDH New York Bureau, Steve Cervillo, cooked up for them. And that was an excellent result, the way that ended up coming about.